I'm Ken Hemmings, and he is Chris Lang, and welcome to another of these regular property briefings. Again, a warm welcome to you, Chris.
I'm glad to be with you.
During the week, you mentioned one of your blog readers had raised with you the issue of Toyota's demise, and also asked how this, along with Holden and Ford leaving, might impact on things here in Australia, and more particularly upon commercial property.
Yeah, you're right. There has been a lot of negative talk in recent months about the detrimental impact of the car industry leaving Australia. Initially, it was Holden and Ford, and more recent time, Toyota. And just the other day, I did a fairly extensive summary of what sort of impact it would have from the Mentor Group in one of the monthly hookups. So let me perhaps give a potted version of that here so that we can perhaps put everything into perspective. And look, clearly our hearts go out to all the affected workers and their families in the car and manufacturing industries and related component suppliers. And I don't think many of us can imagine the shock and surprise that it has unless you've gone through it yourself. And yet, as a country, we need to focus on the overall likely impact upon the Australian economy. And unfortunately, much of the commentary by pundits and so-called experts has been rather misguided. It's clearly emotionally charged and quite often politically motivated. And, you know, those suggestions of it turning Australia into a recession are really quite wrong, misguided, and quite mischievous. So it's the sort of thing you've got to look at overall. And I think Alan Mitchell had an article saying that Toyota leaving is going to be the best thing long-term for Australia. And the structural changes are going to mean that we're not going to be subsidising industries that clearly can't pay their own way and distorting the economy, much like the mining company was, by keeping workers in industries that are not likely to have a long-term future and thereby depriving other smaller manufacturers and related industries of top workers because these other ones are being paid at such a high rate. And I mean, you only have to look at some of the wage packages and profiles of days off, and it's just an extraordinary thing. And the unions have taken advantage of the fact that these major corporations have been getting these handouts and have demanded their pound of flesh and actually ended up pricing themselves out of the market. So that's part of the problem. Anyway, it was interesting, not that long ago, Sol Eslake, who is the chief economist of Bank of America, Merrill Lynch, he pointed out that the car and component manufacturing represents only about 0.4% of total employment, and it also adds only about a similar amount to Australia's gross domestic product. Now, if you stop and think about it, and most people don't even realise that 0.4% is equivalent to the monthly fluctuations, or sorry, quarterly fluctuations that you see in GDP as it's reported over any given year. So you've got to keep it in perspective as how it relates to the total economy. And there was a study done not long ago by Flinders University, and they found that most of the workers who were made redundant during the Mitsubishi closure back in 2007, when they closed two factories in Adelaide, within 18 months, most of them had found alternate work. Now, unlike Mitsubishi, the closures of Ford, Holden and Toyota are not happening immediately. Instead, they are being progressively undertaken, the laying off of workers, over a period right through to 2017. And so what that means is that there's going to be state and federal government pouring money into programs to retrain and support these people, not to mention the individual companies involved themselves. And so apart from those people that might be close to retirement anyway, what this means really is a once-in-a-lifetime opportunity for these employees to have a financed transfer over to a new company, but it'll be a company whose future is not dependent upon government subsidy for its survival. And so if the displaced workers are serious about finding work, they will find it. And certainly in Geelong, I mean, if this happened back when Pyramid collapsed 20-odd years ago, it would have been a disaster. But the whole composure of Geelong has changed. I mean, you've got major government offices opening up there. You've got carbon fibre development the government are pouring money into. Geelong is growing at a rapid rate and can, for those people seriously looking for work, they will be able to find it. And, you know, as I said to my mentor group, you only have to cast your mind back to the bushfire devastation that Victoria went through in 2009. And at that point, everyone said, you know, the devastation, houses lost, countryside looked like a moonscape. And everyone said that the towns would die. I mean, there were community facilities lost and what have you, but the towns themselves were physically unaffected. But they said, look, you know, tourism will die, no one will visit. But what they didn't realise is that there's a recovery process in much the same way with the retraining process going on with the car companies. And with the bushfires, the state and federal governments, and in this case, or in that case, the insurance companies, poured money into the Victorian economy. And what happened was that all these motels and areas that relied on tourism, instead of having to have itinerant occupation, they suddenly found that all the tradies who were engaged to rebuild all the community facilities and rebuild the fences for the farms and football stadiums and so forth, they were living there full time. Now, okay, they mightn't have been paying the normal top rate, but it was 100% occupancy for 12, 18 months. And so the whole economy was underpinned by the influx of funds and people to rectify what was going on. And I believe you're going to see a very similar effect and impact, positive impact, for Victoria over the next 2 or 3 years, which can only be beneficial and help in the restructuring process.
And so following the initial upheaval and necessary adjustments, you're suggesting the adverse impact on our economy will be relatively minor. Will there be some positive benefits as a result of what's about to happen?
Look, I think the effect on the economy won't be minor, or actually be quite significant, but in a positive sense, because, again, if you look at the impact, as we're talking with the fires in Victoria, up until 2008, Victoria had a negative net migration compared to other states. Now, from 2008-09 up until now, it has a cumulative positive net migration, admittedly at the expense of New South Wales. But even with the states that were always having a growth rate of Queensland and Western Australia, their net migration fell by 20% between 2011-12 and 2012-13. 20% fall in net migration, whereas Victoria's in these last 2 years went up by almost fourfold. So the impact has been extraordinary, and this is why Victoria's economy is in such good shape. And I don't believe that there's going to be anything to affect coming out of the car industry closures that's going to cause a problem in that regard. I mean, you only have to look at what's happened recently. There's been a resurgence in household spending. Exports are booming. The Reserve Bank, I think it was Dr. Edwards, said recently after their meeting that the figures show that gross domestic product rose by 0.8% in the final 3 months of last year. And that's an annualised figure of 2.8. And those sort of figures imply a growth which is only slightly below the level which unemployment begins to fall. So the Reserve Bank certainly aren't concerned. They're seeing that they put on hold any bias towards easing, and it's neutral at the moment. I mean, business confidence and profits are surging. You've seen that with all the reporting throughout the last few months. Consumers are dipping back into their savings, and the leading indicators for employment overall are starting to stir. So the acceleration of consumer spending in the final months of last year is going to offer business a lot of reassurance and help boost their confidence, and therefore they're going to start to re-employ people again. And the ABS figures showed that individuals appear to be more confident about spending, and that's obviously helped by the wealth effect of rising house prices and share prices. I mean, again, it's partly psychological, but that psychological confidence flows through into spending. And our savings rate as a nation has been so high, it's up about 11%, which is extraordinary. And once the confidence meter ticks over, or switch ticks over, then people are going to start to spend again. I think spending rose about 0.8% for the last quarter, and that represented about half the total gain in GDP for last year. So, you know, at the same time, your exports have gone up 2.4%, adding about 0.5% to the GDP. And exports are going to continue to rise. There's been a complete change. We've seen the mining industry surge booming investment, which has caused an issue with the two-speed economy, and that's finished. But now we're going to go into not the expansion and financial machinery phase, we're going into the traditional export phase. And so that you're going to see the exports starting to flow out of the iron ore mining company sector, and those exports, for the first time in most people's memory, we're going to start to see exports exceed imports. So we're going to have a positive balance of trade. But we don't only export hard resources. I mean, we export tourism, we export education, we export business services, particularly into Asia. So there's a whole sector of exports that is going to benefit from this improved confidence and global recovery.
How will all this flow through to commercial property, and which sectors are likely to benefit the most?
I think the initial gain as exports improve will probably be in the industrial sector, but then it's going to be paying catch-up in many respects because that has been languishing a bit. Probably your greatest response is going to be in the business services, and that's relating, as we talked about, export, but also with construction improving, you've got home construction, commercial construction will follow, and all the related services to that. You've got architects, engineers, quantity surveyors, builders, all those related finance, all those sectors are going to start to re-employ again. When you buy and sell property, lawyers are involved, accountants are involved, I mean, there's tax issues, all the business services sectors. Now, they all occupy offices. And so the demand for office space in those cities and states where you're going to start to see more development work, there's a huge influx of Asian money coming in, properties being bought up. So all of those services industries that have, to a degree, suffered with the global financial crisis are all of a sudden going to start re-employing and therefore have to rehouse and therefore have to take on more space. And so even though some of the cities around Australia have high vacancy rates, I suspect that as the economy picks up, that those vacancy rates may not blow out as much as was expected. I mean, yes, they will remain over 10%, which is not good for most of the cities around Australia, except for Victoria, which is actually, or Melbourne, which is actually falling, and it's around 8.7%. But this is where you're going to start to see growth. And not only the large companies, but the smaller ones who are servicing, in many cases, the larger ones. So I suspect you're going to see activity in the suburban office area, and a lot of startups are going to occur where people may have been doing things from their kitchen table or their garages. You're going to now have the confidence to go out, and we'll be able to get finance to go out because the banks are pretty competitive at the moment, and to set up small businesses, incubator businesses. And so there is going to be a demand for small factoriettes, smaller strata title offices, and all in all, the strength and underlying consistency of the economy is going to underpin the confidence of businesses and even individuals to set up businesses going forward over the next 3 to 5 years. So, yes, structural change causes problems, and yes, individuals initially have to get over the shock. But as I said, if they are the displaced workers from Toyota and Holden and Ford are serious about getting employment, they will have abundant training and, I believe, abundant opportunity for the newfound skills that they will be able to take on board and make part of their toolkit going forward. And as a result, Australia will emerge from this. You'll look back in 2 years' time and you will see what has happened as being a blessing rather than a curse, as so many people are trying to suggest it is now.
This is clearly an emotionally charged topic, but thank you for providing such a helpful overview and also identifying where the emerging opportunities might lie for our listeners.
I just hope it's been useful and perhaps placed things in a little more perspective as far as investors are concerned.